How did someone who really didn't care much for reading when he was growing up become a fully-fledged writer at such a comparatively young age?
I was always into films. I wanted to be a movie director when I was in my mid-teens. And I think what I actually liked most was story. So whether it's a story told on film or in a book, I sort of did my 10,000 hours of study as a teenager, studying story. Mm. And I found that, you know, to make a film requires getting someone to give you hundreds of millions of dollars. Whereas writing a book, the limit of your budget is your imagination. So I jumped into books.
Ah, because you were a big blockbuster movies fan, weren't you?
Oh, I...
Still are?
Still am. It's funny, I think you... Sometimes you are a victim or a beneficiary of the time that you're born. I was born in 1974. So when I was at that age of, you know, 12, 13, it's the blockbuster action movies of the 80s. It's Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis and films like Aliens and
Spielberg was doing his stuff.
And when Spielberg was in his real prime. And so those were the films which influenced a young Matthew Riley.
Is that why then it's often been said that your books are really like fast-paced blockbuster movies but on the page instead of the screen?
Very much so. I endeavour to make them highly visual because I grew up with that, and I think the audience actually sees so much television and watches so many movies, they think in a movie language. So I'm writing for an audience that thinks in terms of close-ups and long shots and a movie language.
And yet, because you're doing that, you're quite possibly encouraging many young people to read who might not otherwise do so because they think in the movie language.
It's been one of the happy unintended consequences of what I do. I thought I was writing for adults, and my core readership are adults, but it's been lovely to see non-reading teenagers decide that these books actually suit them rather well. So it's not something that I anticipated, but I'm very happy it's happened.
You've been talking with teenagers over the past couple of days. What sorts of things have they asked you?
You know, sometimes they ask me from the simple questions of which is my favourite book to, you know, what's the best line that I think I've written, or what's the favourite scene that I've written. None of the kids in Burnie have asked me in the last couple of days how much I earn. So often the teenagers want to know that too.
You said that you're only as limited as your imagination, and your books could be said to be a combination of science and fantasy. Have you studied any science, or is that incidental?
Oh, no. I read a lot. And part of the fun of what I do and part of the fun of being a professional author is actually you have more time to read up on fun and interesting research topics. I actually read magazines like Popular Science or Popular Mechanics. I found this wonderful book called Physics of the Impossible. And what that was about was, what do we have to discover to enable us to do certain things? Like, what do we have to discover to make traveling from Earth to Mars possible within 2 weeks, rather than taking 2 years?
And what do you have to discover?
Well, some sort of propulsion system. And what this physicist did is that he said, well, he created three grades of discovery. And he said, you will need a grade one discovery, some new propulsion system, to get us to Mars within 2 weeks. But to do teleportation or something like that requires a grade three discovery. And he says they're very, very unlikely.
Is it often reading something like that then that sparks off a new idea for the next book?
Yes. And as I was saying to some of the kids this morning, reading about ancient history is also something I enjoy. And I'd wanted to reinvent Indiana Jones a few years back, but I needed something for my modern adventurer to go in search of, some ancient relic. And I was reading about Egypt and the Great Pyramid at Giza, and it's actually 9 feet shorter than it should be, that there was once upon a time a golden capstone at the top, which was taken away in antiquity. And I thought, wow, that's something my hero can go in search of. So yes, you read these books and suddenly you get something which can be the focal point of your next book.
And then one idea leads to another, leads to another, leads to another.
And you have to make sure you write them down, because you forget them. If you get that great idea.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
So you're a notebook man.
Oh, I have lost millions of dollars from lying down, putting my head on the pillow and saying to myself, I'll remember that tomorrow morning. Have a notebook by the bed. That's the key.
Matthew, a wonderful Tasmanian connection that I discovered. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but as I understand it, you wrote your book Hover Car Racer, and there's a wonderful piece of rhyming there, Jason Chaser, Hover Car Racer,
yes,
after a visit to Tasmania in 2004,
yes,
where you have the entire state under the ownership of a hover car racing training school.
Yes.
Was it Targa that sparked that idea?
No. I've always liked, I live in Sydney, but I've always liked coming to Tasmania. I love the verdant surroundings and the fresh air. And I conceived these hover cars, these sort of cars which race, like racing fighter jets.
Wonderful idea.
At 700 kilometres an hour. And I needed a place to establish this school of the future. And I thought, given that they were racing at 700 kilometres an hour, Tasmania was the perfect size, that I could have races going around the island, going into the inland to the dams and Cradle
varied
Mountain
terrain.
And the varied terrain. And even there's one race where they dash down to the edge of Antarctica and zoom in and out of the icebergs. And so yes, it prompted me to come with my wife on a trip, and we basically based ourselves in Hobart and scouted around and went out to the Gordon Dam and over to Port Arthur. And literally I was measuring out even the Tasman Bridge in Hobart. I was walking around near that bridge because one of the big exciting finishes to one of the races, it's one of the most exciting finishes to one of the races in the book, involves a crash as they come over the Tasman Bridge. Mm. And then one of the heroes has to run, for the last 500 meters of the race, from the Tasman Bridge towards the Cenotaph. So, yeah, you could take a little guided tour of Hobart based on Hover Car Racer. It's very accurate.
One of your characters in that book, Bug, is a very, very interesting character. Mm. Was that meant to portray somebody with Asperger's or
yes,
something else entirely?
No, he's it's quite openly that he has Asperger's or mild autism, sort of high functioning autism. And I've actually done some charity work with Autism Spectrum back in Sydney. A friend of mine has a son with autism. Mm. And, you know, what I like about the bug is that he doesn't speak to anybody except his brother and his mother. And, and in actual fact, he doesn't let anybody touch him, including actually his father. But that is something in his arc in the story. And there's a wonderful scene in the story where the bullies at the school, are ganging up on the bug and are going to hit him. And his brother Jason, the hero, knows that this can't be tolerated. This will cause irreparable damage. And so he steps in and takes a beating on behalf of his brother. Mm. Hover Car Race, there is, of all the books I've done, you know, the Scarecrow books are lean and mean. The Jack West books are high adventure. But Hover Car Racer has got a lot of heart. And it's
and
one of those
deep wells of knowledge.
Yeah, it's just got some good lessons in it and some really nice characters. And there is a moment where the bug speaks aloud. And of course, when I was going to have the point where he did speak aloud, it was going to be something really important.
We have everyone dashing off now to actually pick up a copy of the book, which is probably no bad thing.
Yeah.
You've said in the past that publishing is very much a team effort, in particular the person who has worked on your illustrations with you, Roy Govier. It is a team effort, and yet the team doesn't always get credit.
It's more than a team effort. I mean, Roy did some artwork for Hover Car. When I have a book released and I go on one of these sort of book tours, usually around Christmas time, there are editors, publishers, publicists, sales reps who go to the far corners of Australia and around the world, you know, on my behalf. And I often feel that I am the front man for this sort of gigantic juggernaut. And once the juggernaut starts, it can't be stopped.
Does that make you feel very responsible for livelihoods of all these people?
A little bit, yes. And certainly with the changes we see in the book industry, with a lot of books going to e-formats, I have had several people say to me in the last few months, do I even need a publisher anymore? And the simple fact is, I think I do. I like my publisher. I like the people who work there, and I wouldn't be where I am today if they hadn't taken a big risk on me when nobody knew who Matthew Riley was.
Mm.
So I think there's a little bit of loyalty that's owed there, but it is a team effort. And I actually saw it won some book awards one year, and this young author, her book was named, you know, sort of some sort of book of the year in some category. And she got up and she said, "Thank you. This book meant so much to me. It was a real heartfelt journey that I learned a lot from as I wrote it." And she never mentioned any of the other people. And I thought, I don't know how long you'll last in the book world, because until you realize it's not just about you, you won't get it.
And that's before you even think about the readers. And if it weren't for readers, there'd be no Matthew Rileys and
correct.
So on.
That's right.
Matthew, forgive me, may I ask you before we leave it this afternoon, we're very privileged to have you in Tasmania this month, your first public appearance after the tragic death of your wife in December. You wrote on your blog not so very long ago that you'd begun writing again, surprised yourself by enjoying it. Do you think writing is going to be part of your therapy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't started anything major, and I'm very fortunate that I've actually already written the first draft of my next book. So I can actually just have a little bit of time just to sort of mend and renew. But what I've been working on is just some smaller projects, some of the television and film scripts that I've written over the years. And really just sort of testing out the creative muscles. And it's a difficult time, but it's nice to do something that absorbs you, not distracts, something that absorbs. And there's a real difference between there's a need to distract yourself, but then there comes a time where you need to absorb yourself. And writing, I think, is going to be part of my salvation.
And the fact that fans have cared and sent those messages of caring, did they help?
Oh, yes. Again, it's one of those surprising things. Thousands of messages from fans, and there's real wisdom out there as well. And I think that's, someone wrote to me, you know, how lucky are you to be you, to get all this support? And I mean, I get tremendous support from family and friends, but from fans who are just so supportive. I printed out about 24 of the comments that I got and stuck them above my desk because they were just so lovely.